Right, everyone, welcome back after our first break. And your assignment was to gather any products you have containing the ingredients to avoid and then make a decision about donate or toss. And questions came up, which were great questions, because obviously I wasn't going to mention every single possible ingredient that would be harmful or not so good for you. And so some people came up with some other things, which is great. So if you're reading a label and there's anything on there that's not something whole and real that you understand, like olive oil, tomatoes, broccoli, whatever, it's worth questioning. So while you're on call today, you can question me. Other times, just go to Google and type in the name of the ingredient and then adverse effects. And then you make a decision for yourself whether or not you want to have it or not. On some things, like somebody asked about mustard, and it has soybean oil in it. And soybean oil is not an ideal oil. It's been heated to high temperatures. It's got a lot of omega-6, so not ideal. But it's mustard, and you only use a small amount of mustard. It's not one of the primary ingredients in there, so there's a small amount of soybean oil, and you're going to use just a little tiny bit of mustard. So ideally, yeah, you toss it. But realistically, you probably can use it up and then find a different brand next time that doesn't have it in there. So that kind of thing. Same thing with sulfites. Foxy asked about it being sulfites was the last ingredient in a jar of sun-dried tomatoes. Well, same sort of thing. You know, look for a brand that doesn't have it because sulfites can cause immune system stress, and some people are very sensitive to them and get allergic reactions to them and can cause hyperactivity. They can cause skin breakouts, etc. So, but again, it was the last ingredient in this jar of imported tomatoes. And I said, look, as long as you don't have a serious problem with it, you're not battling with health issues, just finish it, enjoy it, and find a different brand next time. So that sort of thing. Okay, so anybody have anything to report? If you have any questions about any things that you found, and I'd like to hear back, how did that go? Did you find a bunch of stuff that needed to get thrown out? We have Deborah.
Hi.
Hi.
Good morning. Hey, I have three things in my refrigerator that I have questions about now.
Okay.
The first is I have this mustard that I love. It's Annie's Naturals Organic Dijon Mustard.
Mm-hmm.
The first ingredient, it does say it's all organic, but mm-hmm. the first ingredient is distilled white vinegar from corn. And is that just organic or not? Is distilled white vinegar a good thing?
It's not. It's more acidic forming than, say, apple cider vinegar or coconut vinegar. It's generally heated, high temperatures, so if you're really a stickler on wanting everything to be raw, then you're not going to have, that's not going to be good. But again, it's mustard. It is the first ingredient, though, so that's kind of interesting. You're probably not getting a whole lot of it, and I don't think it's a dangerous substance, as opposed to, say, if you're making a salad, you wouldn't want to use distilled white vinegar on it. You'd want to use apple cider vinegar or some other kind of higher quality vinegar. But I think down to everything's organic, if you have a sensitivity to corn, of course, you want to stay away from it. It's probably not GMO corn.
Right, but anyone who has a corn sensitivity, I didn't even think about that.
Mm-hmm.
But being a corn product, it would still have those attributes.
Right. Absolutely.
Very, very, very interesting. Okay. Well, that should be on my my questionable list then.
Yeah, so if you're doing an elimination diet like we are in the Before Be Gone program right now, then it probably mm-hmm. should be something you stay away from for the month and then go back and test.
Okay. Interesting. The next thing is is a product called Veganaise, and it tastes so great. Everyone I know who's tried it loves it. You can have it made in different formulas. I think there are about six formulas at the market, but this one is grapeseed oil, and it says that it's vegan, gluten-free, dairy-free, non-GMO. Expeller Press grapeseed oil. So,
yeah, and that's the highest, that's the biggest ingredient in there. That makes up the majority, because veganese is like mayonnaise. It's a healthier format of mayonnaise. But then we ask the question, is it really? So they basically take the oil. They take grapeseed oil. And grapeseed oil is generally pretty highly refined. I've never seen a real dark, like, you know, deep dark in a dark bottle kinds of grapeseed oil. It's high in omega-6s. And then it's whipped. So which means its oxygen has been flowing into it. So any kind of mayonnaise product, if you really want a mayonnaise-like product, take some olive oil, put it in your blender, whip it up for a pretty short period of time, and you'll get a nice thick consistency. And then you at least know you started with a whole really cold pressed really thing. And you're still, it's still going to have some issues because you're whipping oxygen into it. But olive oil is more stable because it's not, doesn't have a lot of omega-3, 6 in it. It's mostly omega-9s, monounsaturated, which are much more stable.
Okay. And then you would also be able to avoid this brown rice syrup that's in here. And
yep.
It does have apple cider vinegar, but it has soy protein. And I'm not really sure what that is. It just says soy protein. So it could be
isolated soy protein, like soy protein powder type of thing. So, again, if you have soy sensitivity, there's a lot of hidden stuff in these things. You go, oh, I didn't realize that. If I was trying to avoid soy, that I would have to avoid this. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Okay, and then my last one. I think you're going to be absolutely stunned and appalled by this, but this will tell you how often I've used this, because the sell-by date says March 18th of 2004.
Oh, so lovely.
I don't use it a lot, so I guess that's good, but I was really digging around in my refrigerator. And it's called Spectrum Naturals Organic Shortening All Vegetables. And then it says that it's trans-fat-free, cholesterol-free, non-GMO, vegan, and it says that it's the secret is organic palm oil. And then, but so it says the ingredient is, this is the bad part, mechanically pressed organic palm oil. Then the very next sentence over says contains no palm kernel oil. And I actually thought palm kernel oil was okay.
Yeah.
So I don't know the difference between organic palm oil and palm kernel oil, and they're making it sound like one's good and one's bad.
Yeah, and not sure I remember the difference. I think there is a slight difference, but the thing with palm, it's a saturated fat. So if you're on the all saturated fats are bad bandwagon, then you'd say, oh, that product is awful.
But coconut oil is saturated.
So coconut oil is saturated, exactly. So I'm not on the saturated fat or bad bandwagon.
Right, right.
So the palm, it's actually, they're using a saturated fat to create a shortening rather than a partially hydrogenated unsaturated fat, which is, so it's going to be better than Crisco or any of those sorts of things. My concern is, well, it's mechanically pressed, but also the palm it's more stable, similar to coconut or olive oil, where the temperatures can get a little bit higher. But again, it's been, you know, whipped and processed and all this sort of stuff. So is it an ideal food? No. What do you need it for? Obviously, you don't know what you need it for very much because you've had it since 2004 or before. So I would say, in general, I would just toss shortening. If you want to use oil, if you want to get a solid at room temperature type of an effect in a food, use pure coconut flesh or coconut oil. That's my feeling about it.
Right. And I just, honestly, I just opened it. I mean, it wasn't sealed with a plastic or anything. So I just opened the plastic lid here. And honestly, I think I must have taken one knifeful out of this, like right off the top, like a spread, and then put it away and probably prior than 2004. So I've been suspicious of it, I guess, for the last, you know.
Yeah, because you've stayed away from it. Toss. It's a toss. It's a toss.
It's like new. It's like a little brick. Okay.
Yeah, and Michaeline says isolated soy protein often causes digestive distress that's possibly not symptomatic. So it can cause irritation to the gut, and you may not even know. So probably good to throw it away.
Yes. Okay, thank you so much.
You're so welcome. This is good. This is good. I love it. Anybody else have stuff that they found that they want to share? This is great because we're all learning a lot this way. Going to continue and get rid of it all? And we're going to talk about our next. All right, so here's your healthy pantry. So there's a lot of great information in that book. Beverly said, oh, I like that picture. That picture is great. And that's been around for a while. We put that out in one of the earlier lessons within Energy Recharge. So hopefully, you know, if you haven't looked at it now, you have. There's a version of that same book that we have in the Before Be Gone program. The difference between the two is that in the Before Be Gone program, we've gone ahead and taken out all the high glycemic foods. So both of them are, if you were to look at both of them side by side, you'd see that they're very similar. So let's look at your healthy pantry in terms of, you know, it's the staples and it's the fresh stuff. So we're going to go through and see what stuff should be in there instead of what some of the stuff maybe you did find that's in there. So in addition to, of course, your fresh produce, which we all know is good, a lot of people will, this is interesting, so I really want to get this point across. I was at a restaurant, it was at a health conference, a conference of health practitioners, actually, and we were out and we went to some restaurant to get some lunch, and it was, I don't know, Chipotle's or some place where you could get some decent food. And one more person was saying, well, I don't eat much in restaurants because I only eat organic food. I said, oh, wow, that's really limiting because it's hard when you go out. I said, I'm at least, you know, I know that I'm not going to get all organic when I go out, but obviously. She says, no, you can always get some, like, organic bread and organic this and organic that. And I just asked the question. I said, so if you were confronted with the choice between a salad with lots of veggies, but it wasn't organic, and you could get some white bread that was organic, you would choose the white bread? And she said, yeah, because I only eat organic food. And I said, but your reason for eating organic food, right, is for health. You want to give your body the best you can. If you eat organic chips or organic bread instead of a salad that's loaded with nutrition, and yeah, maybe has a little bit of pesticide residue, but you only do it now and then, you're missing the boat. So I want to make sure you're aware that I am a big proponent of organic food, huge proponent. I spend a lot of money to make sure that almost everything I get, as much as I can, is organic. But not everything I eat is going to be organic. I realize that. It's realistic. And I would much rather eat a whole food produce item that's not organic than a refined processed grain kind of thing that is organic. So that's where I stand. You can make your own decision about that. So I've made a list of some of the staples that you always should have around because these will help you to be able to put together meals in a jiffy. So nuts and seeds. And, you know, some people don't do fats and don't have nuts and seeds around. That's fine. Or don't do nuts but do seeds. That's fine. But nuts and seeds as a category. Grains and legumes. Now, some of you eat cooked food. Some of you don't eat any cooked food. But even if you don't eat cooked food, grains and legumes can be sprouted. So things like quinoa can be sprouted. Teff can be sprouted. Lentils, mung beans, adduki beans can all be sprouted. So having those around. And when I say seeds, I don't mean just the seeds that you just munch on, but also seeds that you can sprout, like alfalfa seeds and broccoli seeds and all those things. And these are all listed in that pantry guide. Herbs, spices, extracts, and flavorings. These are phenomenal. And having a variety around will help you to make some amazing meals. Help you to just flavor the same basic dip. Like yesterday, I mentioned earlier in the first segment that yesterday I made this amazing dip and I put cashews and macadamia nuts and Brazil nuts, and then I added lemon juice and a bunch of different spices, and I made a Mexican dip. Well, I took just part of that, the whole bunch I made, I have sitting plain in my refrigerator the other half of that. And I can take that and I can flavor that however I want. And I'll show you some of the ways I set up my kitchen in a little bit. So having a variety of herbs and spices, extracts and flavorings. What's the difference between herbs and spices? Well, herbs are usually green and they're usually, you know, they look more like ground up things that grew in the garden and that you dried. Spices are oftentimes a variety of color and they're often ground up from the seeds or like the, what do you call those, nutmeg comes this way in pods, the pods and the seeds, and they're usually ground up from there. And they tend to be more pungent, but a lot of herbs are more are pungent as well. By extracts, I'll show you when we get to my kitchen and a few of the pictures that I have, you can actually get flavor extracts. Well, everybody knows about vanilla extract, right? It's an ingredient in even The Joy of Cooking and all the standard cookbooks. Those are really yummy, and there's a company called Medicine Flower that makes a variety of them. Well, I went out there and I ordered one of everything there. It cost me a fortune, several hundred dollars, and I wanted to try them. And what I boiled down to is there's about six or eight of them that are really good, and the rest are kind of so-so. So I'm going to share with you from my experience. And you may find it completely different. You may like the banana. I don't care for the banana. So those are that. And then flavorings can be your essential oils. It can be if you go to the health food store and you pick up Frontier Herbs or Acacia, they'll have these different flavors, like, you know, apricot extract or lemon flavor or whatever. And usually it's a combination. Those flavorings are usually a combination of some glycerin or some kind of oil, usually almond oil, mixed with some flavor extracts and essential oils. Well, over the years I've discovered I'd much rather get the whole essential oils, and I'll show you my whole essential oil collection when we go downstairs. And then there's green powders. You know, those are good staples. They're great to have around for quick throw together a meal. I love to carry a little pouches of those in my backpack when I'm traveling, when I'm on an airplane, and they're great to have around for quick pick-me-ups and quick shakes. Same thing with protein powders. We're going to go into depth on sweeteners and which sweeteners you should use and which you shouldn't, but those would be considered as part of your staples. Same thing with nut and seed butter. I have a picture here of the coconut butter, but it'd be almond butter and cashew butter, Brazil nut butter. There's a whole bunch of them. And whatever your choice is to have those around. Some people tend to overeat on nut and seed butters, and if that's you, if you tend to not be able to control yourself, you probably should just buy small amounts and keep just small amounts around at a time. But if you find that, oh, it's so great for me, I'd love to go down, grab a bunch of celery sticks or cucumbers and cut them up and then slather them with a nut butter, and that makes a great meal. Cold processed unrefined oils. There's very few oils that I like and use. I use very little oil, and I don't eat a low-fat diet. Somebody asked me about that. Oh, are you a proponent of low-fat? No, I'm not. I don't eat a low-fat diet, but I don't eat much in the way of oil. Right? So the oils that I may use, olive oil, little sprinkles of it mixed in with for dressings and on salad stuff, coconut oil made usually in some of my fancy little dessert treats, but I prefer the whole food. So the picture here that you see is organic coconut butter. That's actually the whole flesh of the coconut that's been ground down to a butter, kind of like peanut butter. Coconut oil is the oil, that part that's extracted out. In the summertime when it's warm in the cupboard, if you put your coconut butter there, you see it separate, the solids at the bottom and the oil at the top. And that's the difference between coconut butter and coconut oil. So, and I prefer the butter because it has all the amino acids and carbohydrate and lots more vitamins and minerals than the oil. And it's kind of like the difference between if you bought almond oil versus almond butter. It's more the whole food. Some other things that I keep in my pantry as staples, and you may choose to if you've tried them, is konjac noodles. And we've got links in the guide to where you can order them. But if you just go to Amazon, either Amazon or Google and type in konjac noodles, easy to find. Kelp noodles, they're made from kelp. Both of these noodles are made from whole foods that are low in carbohydrates. So instead of eating like rice noodles, you can eat konjac noodles or kelp noodles. And I'll show you those when we get down to the pantry. And then Irish moss. I love Irish moss. It comes as a dried seaweed, that you can then soak and turn into a gel, and you can add that gel as a thickener to foods. You can even, if I had some made, I would have put some Irish moss gel into the dip I made yesterday because it extends the life of it. It's kind of hamburger helper for dip. But it also it's gel-like, and it has a very nice soothing effect on your body, and it's got a lot of nutrition like other sea vegetables do. And you can use it to decrease the fat content of a dip, so you're not eating so much in the way of nuts. You spread it out. So these are some of the things that I like as staples. So let's go and look at sweeteners. And we had a question, are konjac noodles made from a mushroom? And no, it's actually a root of a plant called the konjac plant that grows in Asian countries. And the fiber, there's a really heavy-duty fiber called glucomannan, which helps to stabilize blood sugars. It helps to make you feel full. And they use that root to actually make the noodles. And so the noodles have zero calories. It's quite amazing, quite amazing. So let's look at sweeteners, okay? So sweeteners are good things to have as staples on hand. And I've given you a picture. This is from the dessert book that I wrote with Karen Osborne, Desserts Making It Rich Without Oil. But these, we also make it sweet without sweeteners, without any kind of refined sweeteners. So let's look at sweeteners. And you can make a decision as to what sweeteners you might want to have on your shelf. So we'll start with the medium and high glycemic sweeteners, which all of you guys, if you're going through Before Be Gone right now, these are the ones you're staying away from for the month. And it, before you add them back in, you're actually going ahead and testing your blood sugar to make sure that they don't cause a rise. Because inevitably, for most folks, especially people who are suffering from the B4, right, the belly fat, brain fog, burnout, and blood sugar imbalance, these things are not going to be so hot. But these are the healthier versions, so to speak, of the sweeteners. And I'll just give you my opinion on each one. Organic honey is probably one of the better of them. It's still high in glycemic, but it's pure, it's unprocessed, it has some attributes that could help your immune system. So organic, unrefined honey would be at the top of the list of these medium and high glycemics. Maple syrup, there's a lot of heating that goes on with it. It is a higher glycemic sweetener. It's extracted from a maple tree. Rice syrup tends to be a little bit lower in glycemic index, and it's actually made by fermenting rice, and you get a syrup out of it. So it is a lower, it's probably more of a medium rather than a high glycemic sweetener, used a lot along with barley malt in macrobiotic cooking. Barley malt does come from a gluten-containing plant. Whether or not it still contains gluten after it's been malted and fermented out into a sweetener remains to be seen, but it's always recommended on all the celiac sites and the gluten-free sites to just make sure that you stay away from barley malt. Agave's had a lot of controversy. It was the sweetener of choice. It was this wonderful low glycemic sweetener until we discovered that it's processed a lot like high fructose corn syrup. And is it as evil as some people make it out to be? I don't know, but I'm always of the let's not do it unless it's been proven to be safe. So I stay away from things that have agave in them. As I do, I stay away from things that have any of these things because I am blood sugar sensitive. Coconut nectar is, the way it's processed is said to be that these little natives go around and they collect the sap as it drops from the coconut palm. I'm not sure if that's exactly, if that's just a glamorized way that it works, but it's said to be a raw sweetener, although others say that because there's so much heat in the places where it grows that it's actually kind of cooked and processed. The problem with cooking and processing sugars is that they become higher glycemic and the sugar does rush to your blood much more quickly when they are heated than when they're raw. Coconut nectar for some people works just fine. And in fact, one of the recipes in our dessert book, we use just a pinch of it, like a teaspoon of it, to make a glaze to go over the top of one of the desserts. But I've had people who've just put a cup of teaspoon of coconut nectar into a cup of tea and had their sugar shoot up to 165 on a supposedly low glycemic sweetener. So you have to make your decisions about these. We have some of these, and I'll show you. We have some of these in the house because I make things for kids' parties and things like that. We don't use very much of them. Mostly what we use would be coconut nectar, probably honey, and a little bit of maple syrup, but we don't use it. I have one son who absolutely hates sweet stuff, and the other one loves it, but we don't want him to have too much of it because he gets a little bit hyper if he does. And then there's fructose, and fructose is often sold as a crystalline powder, not high fructose corn syrup, but fructose itself as a health sweetener. You know, I don't think there is a health sweetener, right? Cane sugar. You know, I let my kids on, not my older kid doesn't want it, but my younger kid on Halloween or Easter or whatever have little candies that are sweetened with cane sugar, just so that at least he doesn't feel completely left out. Because I know that if I don't give him that, he'll go out and eat all the junk with all the artificial colors and flavors and everything else in it as well. So these are the kinds of things you might have around. Maybe you have some of these around for some of the other people in your household. I don't know. But these are some of the things you might have. These are the healthier versions of sweetener as opposed to, you know, the cane. They're just sucrose, which is pure, simple sucrose, which has no nutrition left to it and goes right to the system. So let's look at some low glycemic sweeteners. The ones that I use are stevia, some of the sugar alcohols, and not all of them. I'll go through those, and Lohan. And we'll start at the top, and I'll talk to you about the pluses and the minuses of each of these. Stevia is a green plant. I have a picture of it further on. And it is high in nutrition. It protects from cavities. There's a lot of really good stuff about stevia. I haven't read much or anything negative about it, but the negative is that it has a slight aftertaste, and a lot of people don't like it. You can get the stevia in either green powder form, whole green powder form. You can get this white crystalline stevia, which I don't really recommend, or you can get it in these drops, which they take the stevia leaves and they kind of boil it down and concentrate it and get it into a liquid. And it's very concentrated. You only need a few drops, and a lot of them are flavored. So this company called Sweet Leaf makes a whole bunch of them, vanilla cream and hazelnut and chocolate and all these other flavors, and just a few drops of it can sweeten something and give it a really nice flavor. The sugar alcohols, we've got xylitol, erythritol, mannitol, and sorbitol. Sorbitol has been shown to be gastric irritant, so a lot of people get diarrhea from it even if they're not super sensitive. So we kind of try to stay away from things that are sweetened with sorbitol. Mannitol is kind of, I'm not really sure, I haven't really looked at a lot of the research on mannitol, and it's not real commercially available, like you can't just buy a jar of mannitol, but some things are sweetened with it. The two that I use more than any others, and again, I'm talking really rare anyway, I don't use these much at all, but erythritol and xylitol. Xylitol is in a lot of the gums. You'll see the picture on the right-hand side. There's mouthwash, there's gums, there's mints. And xylitol has been found to help with the bacteria that live in your mouth that can cause tooth decay. It helps to decrease those. And a lot of dentists are now recommending that folks go and get xylitol gum, and after every meal that you chew xylitol gum to clean your teeth and protect them. It also comes as a white crystalline powder that you can put into foods. It's a low glycemic and low calorie, but not completely no calorie. Erythritol appears to be the best of the sweeteners, the sugar alcohol sweeteners, in that very low propensity towards gastrointestinal irritation. So it doesn't have, you know, much of an aftertaste, or if any of an aftertaste, and it's lower in calories than the xylitol. The picture here is this sweetener called Zero, which is organic erythritol. My understanding was that it can come from either birch or corn, and with xylitol, you want to make sure you only get the one from corn because birch, because the corn ones can be genetically modified, unless you find a brand that says non-GMO from corn. But I usually, the one I bought is the birch. The birch tends to be better. And the erythritol, same thing. And then the last one on the list is Lohan. And Lohan is actually a Chinese herb. It's called monk fruit. And so it's got, and I'm not recalling off the top of my head all the good properties about it, about what it's used for, because it is used in Chinese medicine, but it is sweet. And you can get it in several forms, and I'll show you a couple of pictures on the coming pages. My favorite one is this Swanson, because it's pretty pure in terms of the, it has a little bit of inulin added to it, but it's mostly pure monk fruit. And it does taste better than stevia. Karen finds, Karen Osborne, my friend who's the raw chef, and she does classes with me, she tends to find that half and half stevia with the zero, the erythritol, tends to be the best in terms of flavor and bringing out the goodness and the sweetness without it being overly sweet and without it having the aftertaste. So this is what stevia really looks like. We used to have stevia growing in our backyard, and it's really easy to grow. You could see it looks almost like mint, and it grows like mint. It doesn't. It's not perennial, so you have to replant it each year. But when we were growing this in the yard, my kids were like, they were fascinated. They were really little at the time, and they would come have their friends come over, come here. We have sugar plants growing in our yard. Come taste this. And they'd have their friends tasting the stevia leaves. So with the stevia this way, it doesn't seem to have as much of an aftertaste, if any. And you can put some of those leaves in a smoothie. You can put them into a dessert. There's lots of ways that you can use them, and you're getting a lot of the green goodness and chlorophyll that you would get from any green plant. So that's the way I recommend using it. You can also get it in a dehydrated powder. Different brands taste different. I found that the Navitas taste better than the Frontier in terms of it. I haven't compared it three side by side. I just ordered some from Mountain Rose Herbs, and I'd like to just sit there and try them all side by side. But I know that the one from Frontier seemed to have a little bit more bitterness. You may find it totally different. So you might try a couple of different of the stevia powders and see which one feels best for you. Deborah says that she has a sensitivity to the flavored stevia drops, and the powdered green stevia works best for her. So something maybe in the concentration format does something to her. So, yeah, you have to find what works best for you. And it's only a tiny amount, whereas in order to sweeten up a cup of tea maybe with sugar, you'd probably put a whole teaspoon or two in there. I remember when I was a kid, I used to do 2 teaspoons of sugar in my tea. But with the stevia, you're talking like not even an eighth of a teaspoon. You're talking a pinch is all. So it's a very, very easy. I make lemonade for my kids, and we put a little bit of stevia in it. They love it. They're fine with it. Actually, my younger son really likes the taste of stevia, and he actually he bought those little packets of Truvia, I think it is, and he loves to just eat them, like, or put them in water and drink them. So my poor kid has a sweet tooth, and I've been depriving him of his life. So here's the Lohan. And the Lohan, this is the fruit. It's a Lohan fruit. And this is what it looks like, the Lohan sweetener. Here's the label. And you can see that there's 0 calories because you're looking at 1 scoop, which is a half a teaspoon. 0 calories, 0 fat, you know, 0 everything. 2 carbohydrate, but it's fiber. So there's very little in the way of anything caloric or anything that would raise your blood sugar. And some of my most sensitive to blood sugar patients have been using this and find it to be very helpful. Now, this particular brand, this is Swanson, has a little inulin in it and Lohan. So it's like it's a combination of inulin and Lohan. And inulin usually comes from chicory or Jerusalem artichoke. Is it ideal? I don't know. I'd rather have the Lohan itself, but I haven't seen a product that's pure Lohan except for the concentrated drops, but then they have alcohol and glycerin in them. Lakanto is a sweetener I first learned about on the Body Ecology Diet. And if you know about the Body Ecology Diet, it's a Donna Gates diet put together. And it's basically an anti-candida diet that's devoid of all sweeteners and very, very low glycemic and very low in grains. And she started using this sweetener, and she uses it in some of her recipes. So I said, oh, let me go check it out. Well, turns out it's erythritol and Lohan. So it's a combination of the sugar alcohol with the Lohan, and the combination together is supposed to be smoother and easier. I don't know if you can tell by the bag, but it's a brown, it looks like a brown sugar type of a consistency, and that's what it is. It also comes in these little individual serving size that you can carry around with you and dump if you're in a restaurant and you want to have some iced tea or something or lemonade. You can do that. And this is the description. You can go out to saroyahealth.com. Here it is, Saraya Canada.com. Ah, there it is. And this is slide 16, so if you want to go back to that. And I actually had a long conversation with the woman up in Canada that runs Soroya, because they also have these chocolate bars, and I'll show you those when we go down to the kitchen. And she was telling me, you know, about the sweetener and how they package it and ship it and all this. So she's very, very helpful, very sweet. And it's organic, so it's cool. And then, but here's stuff to be careful about. So if you just assume, ah, Lohan, it's this good sweetener, I'm going to go get some. Some of the brands are not pure, and they make it sound like they're just so good, Slim Sweet. So the Slim Sweet, other ingredients, crystalline fructose. Well, we're looking for this low glycemic sweetener, and we're going to have crystalline fructose, dietary fiber. Then it has the Lohan, and then xanthan gum and guar gum. So it's not pure Lohan. You're better off either getting the Swanson, which is part of inulin, or the Lakanto. And some people are sensitive. I know one person who uses the Swanson one, she can't do the Lakanto because she's so sensitive to the sugar alcohols that little bit of erythritol causes her to get diarrhea. And then there's this Jarro, which is a Lohan sweet. It's called Lohan Sweet, but it's xylitol. So it's not that much different than the Lakanto, which is erythritol. So it's just a matter of, you know, pick your poison, basically. And the Jarro also has some fructooligosaccharide, which some people are very sensitive to. And some people it works great for. Fructooligosaccharide is a prebiotic. It's basically food for your good bacteria. And Beverly's saying how she uses her own combo of xylitol and stevia, and it drastically reduces the amount of xylitol you need while softening the aftertaste of stevia. And I've read that is actually the best combo for tooth decay. So there you go, for alkalizing your mouth and keeping the tooth decay down. So, great. And she's going to answer, hopefully, what ratio she uses, because it's nice to find out from other people. Of course, you can experiment and find what you like, but if Beverly's figured it out for us, we might as well get her to share. Okay. So there's two things that I would like you to do on this next break. One is go through your house and pull out all your sweeteners and do a sweetener inventory. Decide what you want to keep and what you want to toss or donate, and see if there's any that you need to add, if you want to add some xylitol or erythritol. Okay, and all of the references are in that little pantry book. And then the other thing I'd like you to do is go through the Healing Kitchen Guide and look through the lists of foods and make a shopping list. Look and see which ones sound good to you and which ones you don't have yet, and just make yourself a shopping list, so that at the end of the day, we'll keep adding to that shopping list, and you'll have some things that you're either going to go online or go to the store for. And it might be a phase-in over the next 3 or 4 months kind of thing. If you're, you know, just kind of on a budget and waiting for the next paycheck and the next paycheck, you can add a few things at a time so that you have this really well-stocked kitchen. Okay. Thank you. Michaeline points out, I didn't list a couple of others, which I think of them more as herbs and whole foods rather than sweeteners. But the other things that can be used as sweeteners are things like lucuma, which is a South American plant, and it has a sweetness, and it's a low glycemic, but it's a whole food. It's not just, and then, of course, you've got dates and raisins and dried fruits that can be used as sweeteners, assuming you don't have issues with the glycemic index. And then there's things like yacon. Yeah, I prefer powder. She mentions yacon syrup, just because the syrup, again, is heated to high temperatures to create a syrup, whereas the powder is just, it's usually either freeze-dried or just dried, sun-dried, and then ground into a powder. And yacon is a root. Again, it's like a South American sweet potato almost. But it has a sweetness to the root, but it also has a lot of inulin in it, so that it tends to keep the blood sugar nice and steady. And it helps to feed your good bacteria. And then mesquite is also have a sweetness to it, although I've not really mastered the art of using mesquite in sweetening things. I've not really figured out exactly how much to use, because I've always used too much and then get a bitterness, or used not enough and not really achieved the sweetness. But those are some things that are more whole food sweeteners that would be good to stock and use. And I found that lucuma works really nice in some of the the elixirs that I like to make, but also it works nice in some of the little desserty things when you blend up some nuts and seeds and flavorings and make little candies from it. And what Beverly's saying about the combination, she goes on tastes, and it depends on what she's sweetening. If it's tea, she might add 3-to-1 xylitol to stevia. In other words, an eighth of a teaspoon of stevia and a couple of drops, and then a small teaspoon of xylitol in a large mug. So again, it's kind of proportionally you play with it. If you're very sensitive to the aftertaste that stevia often has, then you might want to do it in such a way that you just put a pinch of the stevia, a pinch of the xylitol, and just keep adding until you get a good combination for yourself. We're going to go to your kitchen again, pull stuff out, start looking at sweeteners and lists in the Healing Kitchen Guide, and make a shopping list. And so the next thing we're going to do is we're going to go to my kitchen.
And we'll be talking to you guys again soon.